Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk with your host, Dr. Tanisha. Listening to Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, and her co-hosts, Steve J. and marriage and family therapist expert, Fatima. This show is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is encourage dialogue across ages, gender, religious backgrounds, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. Feel free to join in the discussion. We want to hear what you think. And don't forget to tell friends about Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back this Sunday to Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. So, you guys, we anticipated on talking about power couples this Sunday, but with recent trends that are going on, we decided to change our topic to something that we think was more present for this current time. And so we're going to bring our powerhouse couples discussion back next week. So make sure you guys tune in for that discussion, because I do think that's going to be quite interesting as we talk about how you can have it all, a successful career and a successful family. But today we're going to talk about the coronavirus. We do know that it has been declared a pandemic. And so we're going to go ahead and get right into the topic because we have a special guest with us today. And so, as always, I want to welcome my co-host. Hey, Steve.
Hey. How you all doing this Sunday?
I'm doing good. I am getting back up to speed to my normal self. Fatima, hey.
Hi, Dr. Guy. I'm here. I am a self-proclaimed germaphobe, so I'm ready to how I can protect myself even more.
You know what, Fatima, I'm a germaphobe too. I have to admit that. So I am probably looking at finding ways how I can continue to protect myself. So I am going to go ahead and introduce my guest, and I am so excited that she is joining us today because I think a lot of people are getting misinformation about this particular topic. So I think it's best to hear it from a physician. So we have Dr. Randall on the show with us today. Hello.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So you are a physician, and can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. So I am an internal medicine board-certified physician. What I primarily do is hospital-based medicine at this point. So I'm what they call a hospitalist, and more specifically a nocturnist, because I really only work at night. And so my focus is seeing folks that come to the emergency room with, you know, chest pain, stroke symptoms, pneumonias, anything that requires that you be admitted to the hospital. It's my job and the job of my colleagues to get you admitted into the hospital, get your orders written and all of those types of things. So that's my what I do primarily.
Perfect. So I really wanted people to know what your background is, because I think with our constant news feeds, depending on what news you are watching, some people are getting some bad information. And so I do want the listeners today to know that they are listening to someone who is board certified, who works in the hospital setting, and the information that you are going to be giving us is information that you trust and believe in your experience is going to be the best thing that we can do to remain as safe as we can despite everything that's going on. So I was sharing with you before the show how I've been paying close attention, I'm sure like most people have, to the virus, but it hadn't hit close to home. Like there wasn't anyone who I knew or a family member until last week. And last week it became real for me. And so I had traveled the previous week, and coming back from the travel, I wasn't feeling too well. And I just kind of thought that maybe I'm just tired, you know, traveling, going right back into work. And so I went through the weekend and I didn't get any better. I felt like I was getting worse. And so by Monday, some of the symptoms that I had was my throat was really inflamed and sore. And so I had body aches, a headache. I didn't have a fever, but because I've had strep throat before, I thought, this is probably just strep throat. But just to be on the safe side, I know strep is contagious. I probably need to go in because I obviously don't want to infect anybody else. So I went to the doctor on Monday, and the doctor, the first thing was to do the strep test. And in my head, I really wasn't worried because I just knew she was going to say, this is strep, take this medication 24 hours, you know, don't be around anyone for 24 hours, and then after that, you should be good. Well, she did the nurse did the first strep test, and it came back negative. And so I was like, well, that's concerning because I just knew it was strep. And so then my doctor said, well, you know what? A lot of the symptoms sound like maybe it's the flu. Let's go ahead and test you for the flu. So I said, okay, I've had the flu before, and this doesn't necessarily feel like it. It's close, but whatever. So she gives me the test for the flu, and that test comes back negative. And so now I'm thinking, well, what's the next test? Because clearly there's something wrong with me. I have these symptoms. My throat is inflamed. She can see all these things. I'm just not feeling like myself. And so she says, well, let's do the strep test again. And I thought, okay, maybe let's do it again. So she does the strep test this time, and it comes back negative for the second time. Now, Dr. Randall, as a physician, she looked at me with a look of confusion, and this is literally a look I never want to see my doctor have, and it was to look at me to say, I don't know what's wrong if it's not this. And so her next question was, well, have you traveled? So I was like, yes, I have traveled recently. And immediately she was like, oh, okay, well, this kind of changes everything. And so she was like, well, that puts you high at risk because you've been traveling. And I was like, oh, okay. So what do I do now? And so she's like, well, I'm going to give you, you know, these two shots. It really should help clear it up in the next couple of days. But in the meantime, you should self-quarantine. And it's funny because I know I heard her say self-quarantine, and this is for all of you workaholics out there. When she said that, the first response I had was, so does that mean I shouldn't see clients? I think it hadn't really registered to me that she told me to self-quarantine. And she was like, yeah, that means you shouldn't see anybody. And I thought, oh, okay. So, all righty. I go home and, you know, I'm like, I need to self-quarantine and hopefully I'll feel better. And then it really hits me that, wait a minute, she thinks I might have the coronavirus. She's telling me to self-quarantine because she doesn't know. And so she says, well, in the next 2 days, you should feel better. But if you do not feel better, don't come back. She was very clear in telling me not to come back to her office. She said, call us, and then we'll proceed from there. And I kind of left the office, and that was, like, it. That night, her office contacted me to see if I was doing any better, and I was kind of like, nope. And so they did a really good job of following up with me every day to see if my symptoms were getting better. And so I really appreciated that about the office, and luckily I did. I started to feel better as the week went on, but that made it real for me that, oh, my goodness, I became high at risk because I traveled and I immediately got sick for whatever reason, and these symptoms look very similar to that. And while I was in her office, she took my temperature at least 3 or 4 times. And I think it was 98 every time she took it. But she just kept telling me once I went home to make sure I was taking my temperature frequently throughout the day, throughout the night. And that was the only thing I think that she was really monitoring for, was to see if that temperature was going to rise, because the symptoms were there, but I didn't have the temperature. So I realized this is a topic that people really need to discuss, but they need to know the facts about it. And so I wanted to bring a physician on like yourself to kind of answer some of the questions that we have. And if we have any listeners who have any questions, they definitely can feel free to ask some of those. And so I'm going to go to my co-host because I have a ton of questions, Dr. Randall, but I'm going to see what questions they want to ask first. So Fatima, because you are a self-professed germaphobe, what questions do you have for Dr. Randall?
Well, I have a lot of questions about face masks. I understand there's a specific face mask that in the general public we don't necessarily have access to. That is the only mask that protects. But then I hear the World Health Organization saying, but if you are a healthy person and you are around someone who is sick, then you should wear a mask. So then that makes me think, well, why can't I just wear one? I mean, I understand that it's not 100%, but isn't something better than nothing? So I'm wondering if part of the, you know, do and don't wear mask thing, is it because they're concerned that people aren't going to do it properly? And so is that part of it? Like, you know, because you wash your hands before and you probably need to wear gloves to put them on, and then you need to take it off and dispose of it if it gets wet, and then you can't reuse the mask. So is part of the problem like being able to disseminate the information and ensure that people are doing it properly? Or I don't know. So I guess my question is something better than nothing if you're doing it the right way?
So you've kind of hit on a few things. So let me start with the first thing you brought up. The mask that you're referring to is the N95 mask, and that's a mask that we use in the healthcare setting that is very specific. We actually have to get tested for the mask because it's a sealed mask. And so you have different masks. You have the mask, you know, you can buy at the grocery store, you can buy them at the dollar store. Those masks are not going to protect you from this virus. Different viruses have different particle sizes, and so, you know, masks are suited for different things. You have masks that are suited to keep you from inhaling fumes. You know, they have all different uses, and they're not all created equal. So the mask that you're referring to that healthcare workers use that are in short supply at this point is the N95 mask. And we use that when we suspect that a patient has tuberculosis, anything that is an airborne illness, right? So anything that can be aerosolized and then be in the air. So that's the first part of your question. The second thing you brought up was, is it just a matter of technique and not knowing how to use it? So the problem with masks is that everybody shouldn't wear a mask. Masks are really for those who have symptoms. So if for some reason you needed to go out, you needed to go to the grocery store, you needed to go and you're having respiratory symptoms, be that a cough, be that fever, you know, headache, whatever, you're the one who needs to wear the mask, not the healthy people. And so because everybody's got that crisscross, the people who need to have on the mask most of the time don't, and the people who don't need to have on the mask are the ones running around who do. So there's a couple of things that's an issue with that because, one, the average mask that you can just buy over the counter is not going to protect you from this virus. What we're hoping by people who have symptoms wearing masks is that you decrease and slow the transmission. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's like a filter. So it's kind of like if you you know, fry something and you use a net to pick it up, you're not going to get all the grease out, but you're going to get more out than you would if you use a spoon or something. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? So you're trying to slow down how many of those particles get out in the air and trying to protect the people who don't have the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think this is part of maybe why there's so much hysteria, because the World Health Organization, like, put out information that says healthy people wear a mask if you're taking care of a person who you suspect might have it. So I hear you saying, no, the mask is for the person that you suspect has it, not you.
It's different if you're saying somebody that's a caretaker. So
okay.
in a healthcare setting, or if you're at home and you're the primary caretaker for mom or whatever, and she's ill, then yes, it would make sense to wear a mask because you know she's got it, right? You know she's infected, that she's got symptoms. What we're referring to is people who are out at Walmart, Kroger, just with a mask on. They have no symptoms.
Right.
They're just out in the public with a mask on. So it's totally different. It, you know, if you're taking care of someone who's ill, absolutely it makes sense to put on a mask because what you're trying to do is decrease transmission between you and them, right? Because you know that grandma has the virus. You're trying not to acquire the virus, but she needs you for care. So it's the same thing as like when we're in the hospital setting. We wear masks, gown, gloves because we know or suspect you have it. We're trying to keep us from getting it. So that makes sense. It's the people who are just out and about floating at the mall, wherever, wearing masks.
Yeah, that definitely was, Fatima, one of the questions that seems to go back and forth with a lot of people. And we are seeing people walking around with the mask on, and we don't necessarily know, should I be wearing a mask, shouldn't I? And so that kind of clears up some of the confusion about it, but I think people are still in fear that
they're still going to do
right, like, oh, I could contract this virus, so let me go ahead and put this mask on because I feel safer with the mask on. So thanks, Fatima, for that question. Steve, what about you?
Oh, I'm a country boy, so I'm not a germaphobe. Really doesn't concern me as much as drinking dirty creek water or some of the things I've probably done in my life already.
No. Mm-mm. So you're saying for you, Steve, this coronavirus doesn't create any increase in concern or change in your lifestyle?
Well, I mean, if we look at, and I'm real big on trends, like there's always a virus. You know, it was the bird flu, it was H1N1, Like, you know, it just seems that this one has garnered a lot more of the media attention than the viruses that we have discussed in the past. You know, it was the pig flu. It was, it's always something, cyclically. So, you know, as long as you pretty much maintain those protocols that they put out about everything, you know, it generally has worked for me all this time. So, not really.
So, Dr. Rando, I have a question. I have several, but this
sure.
is pretty much a response to C's comment. Obviously, yes, we have had several viruses, and we will continue to see viruses in the future. What do you believe has made this virus more alarming for people? Because, like, I do remember just, you know, a couple years ago when we had the Ebola, and everyone was, like,
mm-hmm.
freaking out. And so that did not get to the level in which this did, and it did not spread at the rate in which the coronavirus has spread. So what do you think is kind of triggering some of it? What's the, you know, it's a virus, we get that, but what is making this virus so unique?
I think it's because there's so much unknown about it. It is not the first coronavirus, so to speak. Coronavirus in and of itself is not new. The SARS was a form of coronavirus, but this is a new mutated strain. And so I think just because it's so new and there's not a lot known about it, there's debates depending on what kind of circles you run in. You know, I'm in a physician Facebook group, and there's all this discussion back and forth about, do we consider it, you know, person to person? Do we consider it airborne? Do we, you know, there's all this back and forth. And I think just because it's so unknown and our immune systems have never really seen this before, so we don't have a lot of innate immunity to it, whereas the flu we see every year, some version of it. And so even though it may not be the same version, even though the flu shot is not as effective every year for the strain that is prevalent that year, it does offer some immunity. So the fact that
mm-hmm.
This has spread so quickly, containment seems to really be the thing that separates like China from Italy or South Korea from Italy. If you look at the way that they're handling it and the way that they're attacking it. So just the fact that it's become a pandemic in a very short amount of time, I think is what has people really alarmed. And it doesn't really help that the on the governmental side that we haven't gotten quite the robust response that it should have had. So I think people are rightfully concerned because there's so much misinformation, not even just from the media, but even from leadership. So I think that doesn't
mm-hmm.
help either. It's like you can get a test. Wait a minute, but on the ground they're saying you can't get a test. And, you know,
right.
all this back and forth I think is what is not helping matters. So several things. Brand new to us, not a lot known about it, vaccines are, you know, they're working on them, but you don't make those in a week. You don't make those in a month. You know, they have to be tested and tried. So I think there's just a lot of angst about it and the fatality, the mortality rate associated with it.
Okay, that definitely makes a lot of sense. If you guys are just tuning in to Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk today, we are speaking with physician Dr. Randall, and we're talking about the coronavirus pandemic. We're talking about what are the facts, what are the myths, and what are the best ways in which we can keep ourselves healthy. So if you're listening online and you want to comment or you have a question, you can call in at 914-205-5902. Dr. Randall, I have a question about that. You said we don't know if it's airborne, if it's person to person. So how factual is it about if someone sneezes, right, and there's a droplet that falls on,
mm-hmm.
Let's say they sneeze on a doorknob, how long
mm-hmm.
does this virus or can this virus live, I guess if that's the right term, can this virus
mm-hmm.
live on an item, a doorknob, a table, or, you know, whatever the item
yes.
may be?
They're estimating presently about 96 hours that the virus can actually live on a surface, which is why the recommendations are frequent wiping down of surfaces that you use frequently. So doorknobs, any handles, refrigerator door, your cell phone, which is one that people forget a lot. You know, you touch so many things out even in the community. And then what's other thing that everybody always has in their hand? Their cell phone. So you definitely want to wipe your cell phone down several times a day, because it's just our habit. You're at the counter, you're looking for your keys. What do? You sit your cell phone down. Well, you just sat a surface on a surface, right? So wiping your cell phone. The other thing that people forget is steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like me,
yeah.
I eat in the car mm-hmm. all the time. All the mm-hmm. time. But you're always touching things. You put the cart up and you get in your car, and what do? Touch your steering wheel. So for me, I have mm-hmm. wipes in my car, and I also have hand sanitizer in my car, so that I can, you know, after I've touched something, I can go ahead and sanitize my hands before I touch my steering wheel. I'm trying to make that more of a, you know, a habit to do.
You know what? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is just me, but I feel so ashamed to say this. Until about a week ago, I had never, when I say never, I don't think, and if I did, maybe it was so few occasions, I don't remember, wiped my phone down with an alcohol pad. And to me, it makes so much sense, because my cell phone touches everything. Like you said, I literally set my mm-hmm. cell phone down on some of everything. But it wasn't until the mm-hmm. surges of the coronavirus that I was like, wait, let me wipe my phone down like every day with an alcohol pad. And so am I the only mm-hmm. person, or were you guys walking around cleaning your cell phone, sanitizing your cell phone?
No, I've never sanitized my cell phone. I mean, I wipe it off, but I never think like, oh, I need to like disinfect it. It never crossed my mind.
But it touches
our
face.
I do it because I work in a hospital. But yeah, the average person
right.
probably doesn't think about it.
Didn't think about it. Like, obviously now it's become habitual, but you know, think about something that touches our face all the time. Like, our cell phone is constantly touching our face, and we're constantly touching the cell phone. And so, you know, for people that were not doing it, like myself, I hope that you commit to a habit of now wiping down your cell phone. That's another thing, Dr. Randall, that I started doing. I was in the car,
yeah,
and I had wiped my hands, and then I put my hand on my steering wheel, and I was like, wait a minute, I didn't wipe my steering wheel down, but I just wiped my hands. And so I started to wipe down
yep.
my steering wheel, because I realized, what point am I making by wiping my hands down in the steering wheel, you know? So I definitely think that it's those small things that maybe if you work in the medical field, you're more cognizant of doing those things. But if you're not in the medical field, you don't even think about it, especially. So, Dr. Endo, here's my – this is going to sound bad, but so for people who have kids, I'm terrified of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for people who have small kids, right, like,
uh-huh.
if you are one of my friends and you got small babies and I don't want to be around you no time soon, don't take it personally. I'm just terrified yeah. of small kids, because they touch absolutely everything. So what
oh, yeah.
would you say to parents? What can they do to protect their kids? Because they are literally constantly, and then they're going to school. I mean, the schools are closing, a lot of them, but some of the daycares are staying open. So what can parents do? Because kids don't have the wherewithal to know the importance of washing hands or not touching things. So what would you say to these
right.
parents?
So it, honestly, with kids, it's tough, especially when they're small and everything goes in their mouth. Unfortunately, the onus has to be on parents and childcare workers to be sanitizing things constantly, pretty much. I mean, I don't know that you can actually keep specifically toddlers from putting things in their mouths. I mean, it's just a part of development. It's just the way it is. Luckily and fortunately, this virus doesn't seem to be having the effect that other viruses have had in children. They seem
mm-hmm.
to not be getting the severe cases. So that's the good part. On the flip side of that, it's still too early to tell whether or not they're carriers, which is most of the time, even with the most common viruses, that kids are carriers. So they don't get sick, but they bring it home, and mom, dad, and their brothers and sisters who are not in daycare do, because we all see different things in our environment. So in the hospital, I've seen probably just about everything. But if I had a child, they don't see the stuff that I see, and I don't see necessarily the same things that they see. So my ability to get sick or my ability to make them sick is still there. So that's really what is being looked at now, is one, how this virus is not severely affecting kids, and are they still able to pass it along? Because we can't, that's a factor that we really can't control. I mean, you got two 18-month-old babies together. Oh, they're going to slob on each other.
Mm-hmm.
They just are.
Yeah, that one is, you know, no offense to my friends if you don't see me anytime in the next month or so with your small baby. Don't take it personally. So,
yes,
Fatima, I know you had some other questions. What are they for Dr. Randall?
Well, the two I'm going to ask right now. First, what is the incubation period? So if you are exposed, because it seems like it could be all of the above. Like, it seems like it could be person-to-person, airborne, droplet. Like, it seems like it could be all of the above. So if you are exposed, how long before you would expect to start seeing symptoms? And then I'll come back with my follow-up.
So the answer is, it depends, because there's some people who immune systems are so robust that they don't actually develop symptoms, but it doesn't mean that they're not a carrier. Doesn't mean that they can't still transmit it to someone else who has a weaker immune system, right? So I don't become symptomatic, but I can go home and give it to my loved one. They're estimating that the incubation period is about 14 days, but 14 days from when, right? Because if you don't know that you've come in contact with somebody because they're asymptomatic and you're asymptomatic, when 14 days from when? 14 days from...
When do you start that time frame?
Right. That's the tricky part for folks, you know, who are not symptomatic. And then for people who have symptoms, like I said, what they're recommending, or if you've come in contact with someone who's had symptoms or you yourself have symptoms, kind of like Dr. Guy talked about, was quarantining yourself for 14 days, because that's what they're estimating now to be kind of the window. And so we're kind of a day late and a dollar short on where we should be with the virus, so we're leaning kind of heavily on what was the experience in Italy, what was the experience in China, and so that's kind of where they're getting this data from, because remember, we still don't even know how many folks have it. So it's very difficult to actually say what's happening, because we don't really have an accurate picture, because we can't adequately test. So it's kind of a tricky question, but basically, if you think that you've been in contact with someone, you are supposed to self-quarantine for 14 days. The flip side of that is, if you don't know you've come into contact and are asymptomatic, then you're walking around still, but that doesn't mean that you're not transmitting. So that's why Italy went in, exactly. That's why Italy went into complete, like, everybody sit down, because you just don't know. You know, you don't know who you're looking for. You assume that everybody's going to have symptoms, but that's not necessarily the case. So the way to stop the transmission is to stop people from moving.
My next question is, I'm an asthmatic, so does that put me at a higher risk in terms of it being worse or being more affected? Like, because I know senior citizens are a group, or the elderly are a group at high risk for it affecting them.
Pre-existing conditions.
Anybody with underlying lung disease, immunosuppression, so people with lupus, people with transplants, undergoing chemo and radiation, all of those people are presumed to be at higher risk. But if you already have underlying lung disease, so most of our asthma patients and COPD patients, which are chronic patients who have either emphysema or bronchitis due to smoking, those folks always have issues around changes of season because there's different allergens in the air. If you live in Texas, every time the weather changes, our asthma patients have issues because different things come alive when it's 70 versus when it's 90 or 50. So
right.
All those weather fluctuations affect asthma patients. So absolutely, this is a respiratory virus. Those that are getting severely ill end up in acute respiratory failure. And from what I've been reading, that that gamut runs anything from being a mild failure to full-on needing respiratory support on the ventilator.
So, Dr. Rendell, that brought up two questions for me. And so kind of like Fatima, I'll ask the first one. So in reference to people with pre-existing conditions, so my mom, like Fatima, she has asthma, and like she could get a common cold where, let's say her and I both get a cold, and maybe in 2 or 3 days I'm kind of like back on my feet, and her common cold may put her in the hospital, like literally the same, you know, cold maybe. So what would you say, or is there anything different that those individuals should be doing than the average person? Like, should she be wearing a mask, or it doesn't even matter? She should still be sticking to washing her hands and doing the same things that everyone else has been instructed to do.
So those that are higher at risk, I would say probably should wear a mask, especially if they're going to be out and exposed. The best thing to do, if they can do it, is to stay in and limit your outside contact. You know, and I know for some people that's not possible, but for those who may be retired or have, you know, family support where they can stay home, they don't even have to go to the grocery store, somebody can bring you what you need, that scenario. But absolutely, if for folks who, and there are several people who get, they don't have mild attacks, they go all the way. And those folks absolutely should take extra protective measures. But like I said, the best thing you can really do is try to stay in and limit exposure to others, period.
Okay.
And
then
limit the
amount
of people who have access to you.
So definitely almost you need to self-quarantine if you can.
Essentially.
That's what I've done.
Essentially.
So
that's what
I realize that this is really just hitting the fan for us, right? Even though we've been knowing about this since China dealt with it back in December, like it's now really hitting home for us in the United States. Where do we see,
right,
or what's the time frame that we're looking at? Like, we can say self-quarantine for the next 2 weeks, but the reality is, what's going to happen after those 2 weeks? So, for example, I teach at a university, and, you know, our students are freaking out. And so they've been told, go on spring break this week. We'll give you an extra week of spring break. And then after that, you'll, you know, have your classes online and for the next 30 days. And then after that, the students are like, then what? So you want me to come back in 30 days? But what's going to be different 30 days from now? Then, you know, if they're saying that a cure probably won't happen for another year or so, how does 30 days from now seem safer, I guess is my question, or does it?
So, you know, honestly, in my opinion, I think what's happening is we're being given directives in the short term, because if you tell people, you know, this could last 6 months, I mean, you know, you see what's happened, and they're saying 2 weeks, and people have bought up every roll of toilet paper, every ounce.
Right.
Like, I mean, imagine the hysteria if they actually came out and said, hey, listen, you know, this could last 3 months, 6 months, or whatever, because it could. Honestly, I think what's going to happen is that you can't really, because we don't have the capability right now to test widely enough to kind of figure out patterns. That's what you're, that's what early detection is all about, is figuring out who got it, where are these pockets, how do we isolate those pockets. So very similar to like how New Rochelle, they figured out in New York that that little area was a hotbed, let's shut that down. And, you know, as opposed to letting them traipse all over New York, and now everybody is affected. Let's see if we can't contain, right? So
and they
I
trace
think
it back to that one
like,
guy.
One
right?
guy.
Like for New,
with,
I
think
New Rochelle.
Over
80 was,
cases or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 80 other people from one person. But that's just how, that's, again, what makes it so different from other viruses. But, I mean, just think about, you know, how much people are freaking out thinking about 2 weeks of having their kids out of school. Could you imagine if they literally were like, but this could go 2 months? They would, you know, there'd just be anarchy. So I think they're giving it a little bit at a time. I really don't know that this is going to be wrapped up in 30 days. I'm going to be really honest with you, because we don't know where all the pockets are. People are still out and about, you know, doing their thing. I think we're going to eventually have to get that really high spike in cases for people to kind of go, oh, wait a minute, or for your neighbor to get it or your sister to get it. And now everybody's kind of like, oh, shoot, wait a minute, this is real.
Right.
And then we kind of let the dust settle a little bit. But I in my opinion, I think we have yet to even get started.
That's a scary thought. We definitely are just beginning to see how it's disrupting our daily lives. And so, Steve, I think this one is probably more a question up your alley that maybe you can share. So when this really started to surge, the stock market took a hit and continued to take a hit. And so not only is the coronavirus impacting our physical health, it's impacting all other aspects of life. So, Steve, for you, I think this is kind of up your lane. What are the concerns for people as it relates to their finances and how the coronavirus is impacting them? What do you think?
Well, I'm definitely on board with the doctor. I think that my estimation, I would think it's going to be 3 to 4 months and really not get under control until it really cools off, which really won't be an aspect of us having a handle on it, but just the flu doesn't do well. And that season, I think this is just going to run the whole flu season. I don't think this is going to be anything we get a grasp on immediately. And like she said, I think that is part of what the government is doing, is trying to control the anarchy that would take place. Those opportunists, like the gentleman that was selling the hand sanitizer on Amazon for like $1,700 a bottle.
$1,700 bottles.
Well, no, I think it was like $1,100 per bottle. He had 17,000 bottles.
Right, he had 17,000 bottles. Okay.
Yeah, so he was, you know, so those opportunists. But what we get into is a lot of different things. The economy as we are currently, roughly there are about 320 million people in the U.S. Of that, only 155 million of those people are actually working. There were some surveys done pretty recent that say 40% of Americans couldn't come up with $400 in case of an emergency of the working people. 27% said they could borrow or sell something. 12% said they just couldn't come up with it all. You know, about 20% of the 40% can't pay all the bills every month. And out of that, about 50% of the 155 million make less than 30 grand per year.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at all of these things, we look at the events that have been canceled, we are in a consumer-led economy, which means the consumers need to spend for the economy to go. So that's why we have these events. And now with the events being canceled, with the supply chain being weakened, like we canceled the Final Four, but that college tournament roughly generates $1 billion. So the events that we have basically put our society on have been canceled. You know, Airbnbs are going down. There's no travel. So
the revenues that corporations had anticipated making have gone down, and that's why you're seeing those effects in the stock market. Now, there are some pockets. Like Texas generally doesn't have a recession because of it being reliant more on energy and having its own economy. California as well. But, you know, like, say, for instance, with a doctor, they're going to do fine. Hospitals are going to get overtime, but retail people, not so much.
So, right. Retail and restaurants.
So what I'm thinking is going to happen, and I'm being a little making a prediction, this is actually just going to change the economy overall. You'll find out now if you have a career or you have a job. You know, there are a lot of people that are going to be working from home. After this, there will be a lot of redundancies put into the supply chain where we're not as resilient on China. You know, as the doctor can speak to, China makes a lot of our medicines as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're talking about where the vaccine was going to come from, it probably would have been made in China.
Right.
You know. So, you know, you look to developing corporations will look to develop other hubs in Vietnam, South America. But this is going to continue because by and large part of the problem in the U.S. economy is unless you're knowledge-based, people really don't produce anything. They don't make things. They don't make any products. You know, they have services, but, you know, for every one corporate job, it supports 3 to 5 service industry jobs. So as those corporate jobs are eliminated because of lack of travel, lack of sales, then you'll see those other industries shrivel up as well. So we'll be relying a lot more on the government in this term. You'll see Trump probably extend more small business loans. There's been talk of not being able to evict people, you know, utilities staying on for 90 days before disconnection versus 30. So, you know, we're going to be in a very difficult place financially. So that is going to lead to what we talked about with the toilet paper hoarding and, of course, crime will go up. As you and I have joked, then we will also have the rise of the homosexuals. The divorce rates will go down, you know, because people won't be able to.
Wait a minute. I just want to know that, because, you know, we talk about the homosexuals. Like, I don't know if every listener knows what that is, Steve. You want to clarify what that is for everybody that's listening?
Well, homosexual, we've taken the word hobo, which means, you know, someone who's pretty much a transient and sexual and someone who is, you know, dependent on a person for a place to live. So, you know, this might be a good time for, you know, you guys who have looking at that secretary who's about to get laid off. You might want to go ahead and jump in her DM, or that girl who's seen that guy at the gym who's a trainer and, you know, his clientele may be going down a little bit because of this coronavirus. You might want to, you know, go over and talk to him before he loses all his clients. And, you know, he may need a place to stay during this corona epidemic. So you'll see that, like we talked about. You'll see the you know, the divorce rate will kind of go down. Yeah, I know what you're doing, but I just can't afford to leave right now. You know, we'll sort this out later. But, you
right.
know, so
that's true.
Those are the things that, you know, I'm anticipating happening. You know, as my friend says, he said the price of sex has gone down tremendously. So, you know, if, you know, you're out there and you're dating and you have your ducks in a row, you can, you know, be the man all of a sudden, where last week you were nobody. So,
Steve, you know what? Your take on everything, I always look forward to it. I so appreciate that.
I'm just... You can ask the doctor. There are going to be so many men hanging around that just want to rub feet, and, you know, I'll, you know, walk the dog while you're at work. I know you're overworked. You know, I'll look after the place for you.
I will not ask Dr. Randall that, so I'm going to ask her.
I'm sure Dr. Randall is aware. They're hanging out.
I'm not going to ask her that. But, Dr. Randall, I do have a question from one of our listeners. And she says, let's say a person has the virus. What are they giving people to ease some of the discomfort they may be experiencing from the virus?
Okay. So there is no cure for this virus, right? So all you're doing is treating the symptoms. So Robitussin if you're coughing, you know, the NyQuils, all those types of things. So everything you use when you have, like, the common cold or even when you get the flu. A lot of people are taking things to, like, help boost your immune system. Some people think it works. Some people don't. I personally am a fan of Airborne. They're not paying me to say that. But but I personally use it, especially yes, when I'm going to be around, you know, nieces and nephews. You know, I used to always, like, a couple of days before, let's get it together. So there's really not, there is no cure. And that leads into another thing. That's for those who may be confused as to why they're like, do not go to the emergency department, even if you think you have it. Because there's nothing that they can give you that's going to make it any better. There's nothing to cure it. It's not a bacteria.
So does it slow down? Is there anything to, so it weakens people's respiratory system. So what is used for, in those cases? How do you treat a respiratory problem?
So if, for example, you just have mild discomfort, right? So, like, I just don't feel right. I'm coughing. My chest is hurting, that kind of stuff. It's basically over-the-counter agents. The only time that they want you to actually present to the emergency department is, like, I cannot breathe. You know, you're having shortness of breath. You can't catch your breath. Those.
Dr. Randall?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, now we can.
Okay, sorry. So, yeah, only for people with severe symptoms where you actually need respiratory support, be that to be put on the BiPAP machine, which is one step before they actually have to put the tube down to breathe for you. That's the ventilator. So only people who are in severe respiratory distress should present to the hospital, because if you have just, you know, my nose is running, my head is hurting, you know, all of that type of stuff, those are things that you're going to they have to run their course. And you treat that with the over-the-counter and your symptomatic treatment. Those are the folks we don't want to show up in the emergency department for several reasons. You're going to expose other people for really no gain, because there's nothing we can treat. There's nothing, you know, we don't have anything to treat you at this point. There's no vaccine. There's no flu shot equivalent. So only those folks who literally cannot breathe and need support from a respiratory standpoint come to the hospital.
Okay, so this is a question, and it, maybe you kind of touched on this already. What about the transfer from, let's say you're at a restaurant. Should people be concerned about someone serving their food who might have the virus? And I'm not saying they're not coughing or sneezing, not in those cases, because that's just hopefully not happening. People aren't coughing or sneezing on your food. But just in general, is that a concern that people should have, someone serving your food?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, if you can avoid eating out, that's definitely, you know, probably a good choice to make at this point. Just because there's so many unknowns and so many, you have some people who are just completely oblivious to hygiene and to washing their hands. I mean, it's just amazing to me that this seems to be a new phenomenon for so many people. Like, oh, we're washing our hands? It's like, well, what were you doing before? So, you know, absolutely. You know, absolutely, you want to be paying attention to the people who serve you. You know, if they're coughing, if they're sneezing, did they cover their mouth? Do they have on gloves? Did they touch, you know, are they making sure that they're not contaminating, you know, cross-contaminating or whatever? You know, you definitely want to be cognizant of that and make sure that they're wherever you're eating, that they're taking the appropriate measures to keep you safe, for sure.
Okay. Fatima, this one is a question that I'm asking you to kind of touch on. Steve kind of mentioned how the coronavirus is most likely going to continue to impact the economy, but how do you foresee the coronavirus impacting people's mental health, and what are we probably going to see more of, and what can people do to kind of deal with some of those issues that we're going to start to see? Uh happened? Did we lose Fatima?
Can you hear me?
We might. Now we can.
Okay.
Can you hear Fatima?
I think we're going to, I think we're going to see increased rates of anxiety. People, I think, are going to be dealing with a lot of stress and anxiety. I would say this is probably a good time to seek out mental health professionals that offer teletherapy over the phone or video via Zoom. I actually have already seen some issues. There's a I was hearing about a couple who they've decided to stay apart during the quarantine because one of the couple members has to come in and out working outside the home. And so the other partner decided that it would be safest for both of them to just stay apart during the quarantine. And I'm sure you can imagine that brings up a lot of feelings, you know, till death do you part. What does that look like? So I think we might see people having to make some decisions that they otherwise wouldn't necessarily have to make, and it could possibly test the relationship and put a strain on some relationships. So I hear Steve when he's talking about, you know, people coming together for financial reasons, but I think for safety reasons, we might see people pulling apart.
I also think there's going to be, you know, y'all need to mark your calendars, and I think there'll be a spike in some births around 10 months from now.
Right, because people are quarantining themselves. So,
yeah, and with so much Netflix and Amazon, going to be able to go on.
Exactly.
You know what?
Also,
I'm going to say
I think that one of the things you're going to see is some xenophobia related to certain ethnic groups. I've seen that since this has kind of started out in terms of people being a little wary of the Asian community.
Absolutely.
And, you know, not that that is any burden that they should bear. It's just that's where everything started, and, you know, diseases don't have any particular rhyme or reason to that degree. We all are humans, so.
Right. We're definitely seeing that, and I think that we're all of us are in different states, and so we know that I think we've heard of cases of Asian restaurants that are suffering financially because customers are not coming in because of a fear. And so they rightfully have a fear, but it shouldn't be a fear because the owner of that restaurant is Asian. Like, I think you just heard Dr. Randall say, it should just be a fear of just eating in public, period. And not to discriminate against these specific restaurants because they are Asian owned. As Dr. Randall has said, that this virus is literally like it doesn't discriminate. And so I think people should just be cautious about, you know, eating out as less as possible to kind of combat that. But then that creates other issues on the financial side because restaurant owners need customers, right? Like, this is their livelihood. And so it seems like one has to sacrifice something for another, and it's unfortunate, but it seems like that's kind of where we are when it comes to safety for this particular topic. So I want to ask Dr. Randall another question, but I think we're going to have to get her back. We may have gotten her, she may have dropped. But one of the things that when we were talking about mental health, I think a lot of people are about to be driven by fear. Not about to, I think a lot of people are currently driven by fear. And fear can spark a lot of other issues that can trigger other things from past experiences. And so I think people should also be mindful about that and how even though the fear might originate with the coronavirus, it could trigger other past experiences. And in those cases, like Fatima said, it's definitely probably best to seek out someone who can provide some type of teletherapy or some services that can assist you at that time. Dr. Randall, can you hear us? Still may have a bad connection.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear? Yes. Uh-huh.
Hello? Okay.
Yes. Can you hear us? Oh,
yes,
great.
I can
You're
hear
back.
You.
Okay. We have another question from a listener, and the question is, what would you suggest in reference to flying? Should you fly unless it's necessary?
I would say to try to limit any unnecessary travel, just because there's so many variables and there's so much. It's just so easy these days for people to be in one place and in another place. And just because you started off in the same place doesn't mean, or you end in the same place doesn't mean you started in the same place. So it definitely increases your risk. People are not always using their best judgment as it relates to flying or staying home and making decisions that are in the best interest of everyone. I think this weekend they just had an example of someone from the
Dr. Randall? Bad connection. Hopefully you guys will get her back so that she can finish her statement. But if you were not able to hear what she was leading with was if you don't have to fly, she was suggesting not to because everyone doesn't take the same precaution that they should. Let's see. Dr. Randall? Dr. Randall, can you hear us? Looks like she dropped again, unfortunately. Okay. So hopefully we will be able to get her back because I definitely have some more questions that I would like to pose her before we run out of time today.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, sorry. For some reason, Brent won't let me be great today.
It's okay.
But I'm not sure which part I cut off at, but basically I would say limit non-essential travel if you can. Too many risk factors, too many unknown variables.
What? You mean I can't take advantage of that $300 flight to Hawaii?
You certainly can. Just know your risk.
I know, Steve. Every time I see it, it's like $81 one way. I'm thinking, oh, I could just so be on a plane to Hawaii and take much-needed vacation right now. I think about it all the time. But the risk
is way too
great.
Well, as I was telling you, you get to Hawaii and see everybody over there has got a mask on and you won't want to have went.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't enjoy myself. Maybe. I don't know. It's a possibility. I don't think I'm willing to take the chance.
Right.
Like playing Russian roulette, and I don't know if I really necessarily want to do that right now. So, obviously, safety's first.
I have a couple more questions.
Go ahead, Bettina.
So, Dr. Randall, if you do get the coronavirus, and then you recover, mm-hmm. can you get it again, mm-hmm. or do you now have antibodies and immunities built up that you're safe from reinfection?
Ooh,
so I wouldn't say that you're going to be – I wouldn't say that you're safe from reinfection. I would say that your body has seen it before, so your response is probably going to be a little bit better than what it would have been the first time it saw it. But I think, one, this virus is too new and we don't know enough to say anything for definite. But just knowing immunology and kind of how the body works, once it's seen something before, it can kind of mount a response a lot quicker. And it's like, hey, we know this. Do this, 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 and this, right? Whereas this is a novel virus. We've never come in contact with it before. So we're building immunity as opposed to building a response. So I would say the chances are you can probably get it again, but it probably won't be as severe because your immune system will, assuming that there's enough time between your exposures, that your body has a chance to actually build up immunity, as opposed to like, okay, you got it last week, you know, quote unquote, cleared the virus, but then you come in contact with it the same week. Well, I don't know, you know, that there's been enough time there for your body to actually rebound, that it could take another hit. So, you know, like I said, I think so much is just yet to be determined with this virus. They're actually starting to lift quarantines and trying to, like, increase social activity in China because their rates of transmission have gone down. So it'll be very interesting to follow that and see, are they starting to see resurgence again, because now they're starting to allow, they've relaxed some of their, you know, their restrictions. So I think that is to come. We'll know a little bit more about that as we get a little further down. It's just really hard to say right now, because, like I said, we still just don't even really have a firm grasp on how many folks have it, and what those demographics look like. I mean, we're just kind of out here shooting from the hip.
Okay. That was definitely one of my questions, Fatima, that I wanted to ask, and I think a lot of listeners are curious about that. So thank you for asking. When we first started to hear about the coronavirus, and I can only speak for me personally, is that when they started talking about the death rates, I immediately thought, oh, you get it, you die. And so obviously now there's been more information that's been put out about the coronavirus. And so can you explain that a little bit more, Dr. Randall, because it's not a virus that you get and it automatically leads to death. And I think that's what pushes a lot of people's fear, is that, oh, my goodness, I get it and I'm automatically going to die as a result of it.
No. So like we kind of talked about, there's some folks that are going to get this virus who can kind of self-manage at home, and it's going to be just like your run-of-the-mill flu. They have to go through the aches and the pains and the fevers and so forth and so on. You kind of just have to go through it. And then there are going to be those folks who require respiratory support, who have to go to the emergency room to get higher level of care. So it's going to run the gamut. Not everybody's coronavirus exposure is going to be the same. There are some factors like, do you have underlying lung disease? Are you already immunocompromised? All those types of things that are going to weigh in are going to be factors into how your course proceeds. But it's absolutely not, you know, not the case that everybody that gets coronavirus is going to die from it. Absolutely not. It's actually quite the contrary. However, spreading transmission or decreasing transmission is what we're focusing on right now.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that for me, that eased some of my anxiety, knowing that there was a certain people that were higher at risk and they were seeing more fatalities as a result of these aging populations. And so there was even a chart that I think I saw this on CNN or one of the news channels, but the majority of the deaths were 75 and over. And obviously not saying that at a younger age you can't die, but definitely it showed me that people who are an aging adults are definitely more at risk, and obviously those who have these compromised immune systems. And so that was something to be aware of and obviously to take caution about. Right before the show, Dr. Randall, we kind of talked about being mindful not just about yourself but about your community and your surroundings. What can you say to speak to that?
Absolutely. So, I mean, just because you are not exhibiting symptoms doesn't mean that you're not a carrier, doesn't mean that you aren't at risk to infect other people. And so you really have to be cautious in going around, you know, especially if you're still out and about, you're still going to work, you're still exposing yourself to the community in some way, shape, or form, to be cognizant when you go to visit grandma or when you go to visit, you know, older family members or folks who may be in that immunocompromised state. You want to, you know, just be mindful that no symptoms in you doesn't mean that you're not a carrier. And I think people think that because, oh, they feel fine, that they are not at risk to actually be a vector, and you definitely can be. So just in that way, being, you know, being mindful. Also being mindful from the perspective of it's just not necessary to buy all the toilet tissue, all the Clorox, all the wipes, because if your house is clean but all the rest of your neighbors have no ability to clean their homes, you're still at risk. So it just means being a good steward. You know, get what you need for a week or two. We are not at risk of not having anything. Like, we still have purified water. We still have water filtration systems. Like, we're still, you know, an industrialized
right.
country who has way more perks and benefits than the average third world country. Like, it's going to be okay. You don't have to hoard everything, because in hoarding, you just make it difficult for your neighbors. And if your neighbors aren't sanitizing, aren't washing their hands, aren't cleaning surfaces, then their children are playing with your children and, you know, still touching the same thing. So just be mindful that, you know, it's just not necessary. You know, buy what you need for now, and consider that this is going to take all of us doing our part, and we all need to do the same things in order to make sure that we control the spread of the virus.
Absolutely. That information has been so helpful. And one of the things that it seems like though they continue to say on different news reports is that this is a virus that is requiring each individual state and even city to adapt to it individually. And so, for example, what New York is doing may not be the same thing that people in Chicago will need to do, or even people in Texas might need to do. And so I am going to encourage people to follow what your local city or state is implementing, those things, because they're trying to keep you safe, whatever those measures are. I know for my city, they have kind of put out some things, some measures that they would like for us to follow to obviously stay as safe as possible. And so sometimes people kind of ignore those things and kind of want to do their own thing, but they're putting those things in place for a reason. And so hopefully people will follow those to the best of their ability. So I think that for me, Dr. Rentner, you have answered so many questions that I had, and some of our listeners have had, and you provided some clarification. And so before we wrap up, I'm going to go to Steve and Fatima and see what their closing remarks are. And then I'm going to come back to you, Dr. Rendell, so that you can just leave our listeners with your closing thoughts.
Perfect.
So Steve, what are your closing thoughts?
Well, in times like this, you can look at it as an opportunity to do some self-reflection. A lot of times, a lot of successful people are made during times of trouble, recession. This is definitely going to be one of those times. This will let you know if you're happy with the way that you earn your living. If you're happy with the sick time and how you're being treated and conducted. So look to that and, you know, just try to hold out, and hopefully you will be able to get through this without contracting anything, and evaluate the your financial situation and move forward and be more successful. And watch out for the homosexuals, because they're out there, they're men and women. They look good, too.
Always thank you, Steve. Fatima, what are your closing thoughts?
If you are anything like me, and this conversation has caused your chest to start burning in the inside, and that hypochondria is raising its ugly head, take a moment and ask yourself, what are real symptoms versus perceived symptoms? And do like Tima's going to do. I'm going to contact my therapist to see if I can get me a telesession next week. And you can use something like Psychology Today and use that as a filter for who offers video or phone counseling. So that's the thing that I really want to encourage at this time, is that people are making sure that you are checking in with your mental health and trying to stay, you know, as calm and decrease as much stress as possible. Because definitely, if you are ill,
the stress and anxiety doesn't do anything to help the illness. It probably only just makes it worse.
Thank you, Fatima. And Dr. Randall, what are your closing thoughts for our listeners?
I would say, above all, don't panic. Be judicious. Wash your hands. Be a good steward of your resources. So, again, we don't need to buy up everything. Just buy what you need for a week or two and consider your neighbors. And take care of each other.
Absolutely. Thank you again for taking time out of your busy Sunday. Obviously, as a physician, you have some busy days ahead of you, and so I so appreciate you taking the time today to call in and disseminate the information that you did, that you provided to our listeners. And so, you guys, in the next couple of weeks, a lot of schools and cities have decided to close for the next 2 weeks. And so you have kids that will be at home. Some parents will be required to stay at home with their kids, and some parents will not be able to stay at home with their kids. One of the things that I am going to piggyback is what Dr. Randall said about this idea behind being a good steward. During times like this, it is really easy to forget about everyone else and to only focus on yourself. And so I'm asking everyone to really think about others and to have this idea behind the collective community. And so even though you might not be somebody in need, even though you might have the resources, there are people that don't. And if you know those people, do whatever you can to assist them. Because ideally, if you're not one of those people, you're fortunate and you're blessed, but everyone isn't there. For some people, they're going to miss work and they won't get paid for that. Hopefully that will be changing. But for some people, they'll have to make the decision, do I go to work sick? Or do I stay at home and not be able to pay my bills and take care of my families? And I hope that we don't have a lot of those situations, but if it comes down to it, these are people that are going to really need some assistance. And so in the upcoming days and weeks, you guys, however long this takes, please think about others around you. Think about the community. Not only keep yourself safe, but try to keep everybody else safe. So you guys, thank you for tuning in to Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. And as always, don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on, tell everyone about Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. Everyone have a blessed week, and don't forget to wash your hands. Bye-bye.